श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर परमानंद हरि हरि वो। Pranam to all of you. Good morning from the Harmony Collective in Michigan. And today we are continuing with our series of lectures on Sri Brahma Stuti. Today is lecture 15, in which we will be studying verse number 13, getting closer and closer to a very important section. Very important verse, which will be the next one from the Brahma Stuti, but till today still building up to that. So as usual, let's begin with a brief recap of what we studied some days ago when we went through the verse number 12, in which we explained how Brahma made the point of Krishna being the source of the second Purusha. That was verse 12. In verse 11, Brahma made the point of Krishna being the source of the first Purusha, Mahavishnu. In this one, he will make the connection with the second Purusha, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And in this way, today he will make further points in that connection, building up to what he will say in the next verse, verse number 14, with a very famous statement will be there, basically mentioning that Narayan, God himself, is an Anga or a limb of the Angi or the original form of the Divine, which is the one that Brahma is having in front of him at this moment, Braj Krishna. Not only Krishna, but Braj Krishna. Braj Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. As always and always, it's never enough to emphasize this. This section of the Brahma, of the Bhagavatam, Brahma Vimohan Lila, Brahma Stuti, make play out this very, very important statement, the Paribhasa Sutra of the Bhagavatam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But again, here we are building up to that. So let's make a brief recap of previous verse, verse 12. So Brahma is saying, O Shri Adhokshaya, does the mother take offense when the child within her womb kicks with his legs? And is there anything whatsoever, whether designated by various philosophers as real or as unreal, that is not within your belly? So interestingly here, while addressing Krishna in connection to Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who is the Paramatma, if you will, of this particular universe, he presents a, without saying that directly, but he presents the notion of Achintya Bhedabhed, or how it, what we may be calling modern language, panentheism. So we a little bit explained this idea of all in God, and how the notions of theism, classical theism and pantheism somehow are not complete unto themselves, because they give us God, but we lose the world, or they give us the world, but we lose the personal notion of the divine. But panentheism speaks about how the two of them shall always meet. The world is a Shakti of Bhagavan, so Bhagavan remains as a person, as Shaktimam, the supreme energetic source. And the world, Maya Shakti, if you want to connect with that particular energetic department, is one of the potencies of Bhagavan, Parasya Shaktir Vividhai Vashriyate. The Absolute is accompanied by Shakti. So we have Shaktimam and Shakti. So in one sense, the two of them are one, since the energies are inseparable from the from their energetic source. But at the same time, there is a difference between them, which allows for the opportunity of interaction, ultimately loving interaction. So Brahma is mentioning here basically that, while saying that, I mean, everything is within your belly. So everything is in you. You are God, all in you, all in God. Panentheism basically means pan, all in theism, all in theos, all in God. So, which of course is the official philosophy, the official darshan of our particular tradition, as Srila Jiva Goswami has termed it, Achintya Ved Abed Tattva. The view of reality in which everything is different and non-different at the same time, between the energetic source and his different energies, shaktis. And Achintya, as we always say. Achintya we translate it as inconceivable, but the main point here is that all the things that are inconceivable become understandable if we turn to Shastra. That's the point Jiva Goswami makes in his commentary to the Sandarbhas. Achintya doesn't mean that there is no possibility whatsoever of grasping that which is Achintya, but that thing will remain Achintya as long as until we do not turn to revelation. But by doing so, that which is Achintya becomes understandable, reveals to us through revelation, basically. That's the very idea of revelation. You need that particular descent or connection for you to grasp that which otherwise will remain impossible to decipher, to grasp. So basically here Brahma is presenting this cornerstone, philosophical cornerstone of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, Achintya Ved Abed, by implying everything is within your belly and so I am. So he also uses this analogy of the baby in the belly to pray for further mercy and forgiveness. So Brahma is comparing here to a baby in Krishna's womb, and he gives this charming, if you will, example, saying like, in the same way that the mother won't take offense for the kicking of the baby, but actually on top of that the mother will be delighted by that, like a confirmation, he's there, he's communicating with me, he's alive, he's there. So please, in the same way, do not take offense. I'm like a baby in your womb, and whatever I've done some minutes ago is like the kicking of a baby there. And we also explored this idea of, it may sound for the untrained eye that this expression of Rama tends to manipulate Krishna. Like, actually I didn't do any offense, so please forgive me. But actually that's not the case. We explored the possibility of how humility may play itself out in different ways, in different stages. So before these verses, we have seen how Brahma expressed his humility in a very straightforward way, if you will, condemning himself, feeling fully repentant, acknowledging the magnitude of his mischief, if you will. But now, he also wants to have a connection with Krishna and Sakya. So these moments he's having some glimpse of how to approach that reality and how to relate in Sakya Rasa like terms. So we could say that by giving this example of him being a baby in the womb, somehow he's approaching that reality on some level, but that's an upgraded level of humility. It's not that his humility is getting diluted here, but on the contrary, although externally it may seem something else. So that's an important point to keep in mind. Humility does not always, or any other quality for that matter, doesn't always play out in exact the same packaging. So we should be very attentive, be very essential, substantial to contemplate the spirit behind the form, as to really acknowledge what's actually taking place there. Because again, externally it may not seem humble, but it's extremely humble. Or externally, it may seem humble, but it's not humility. There's no humility at all. Everything can happen. So we have to become saragrahi, go to the substance of reality, and not become entangled in judging things and persons and situations only according to form. When we say we are not this body, we are not this form, actually means do not get entangled on that particular layer, platform of seeing everything according to what it appears to be. That's the very definition of Maya. It seems something, but actually something else. So every time we are judging reality according to what it seems to be, actually that shows how much we remain under the influence of Maya Shakti. And to get out of the influence of Maya Shakti means I want to perceive reality, to judge reality, to relate with reality according to what reality actually is. And that's the very definition of reality, that which is real, not that what seems to be, but actually something else. Illusion is what seems to be something, and what actually something is, that means reality. So that's one of the main symptoms of how to understand under which Shakti we are sheltered, if you want to put it like that. Anyhow, so Brahma is presenting this idea in order to increase his prayer and begging of forgiveness. He addresses Krishna here as a Dakshaya, interestingly, which generally means he who is beyond the reach of mind and senses. But among other possibilities, Adokshaya, as we explained according to Srila Sanatana Goswami Pad's commentary, Adokshaya also refers to a name that the Brajavasis gave to Krishna when he was born again. Adoksha Ja. Ja means born, to be born or born again. Here, Adoksha means under the cart's axle. So that's connected with the Putana Lila according to the Harivamsa Purana, although for us, if we follow the Bhagavatam narrative, maybe more connected with the Sakatasur Lila. But whatever the case, the point is he was born again, and Brahma with this implies this idea. He says, okay, in those Lilas you executed as a boy, Balla Lila, you are pretty mischievous. We know. You stole butter, and you stole this, and you did this, and you did that. And your parents always forgave you. So as your parents always forgave you, you please forgive me. Again, it seems a little bit bold for Brahma to imply all the things by naming, addressing Krishna as Adokshaya, but actually he is expressing deep humility. As your parents forgave your mischief, please forgive mine. I trying to interrupt your picnic. That's a very grievous situation. So basically, these are some of the thoughts and implications from the previous verse that we studied a few days ago, verse number 12. And today we will continue with some further elaboration on Krishna's ontology, on Krishna's actual inner standing or position. In the context of Aishwarya, remember that Brahma still is making sense of who Krishna is and who he is in connection to who Krishna is. He's still discovering who Krishna is, so he's still discovering who he is in relation to Krishna. All this, of course, in the context of his ultimate prospect in the context of Sakyabhava. So that's taking place more and more after each one of these verses is continuing. Brahma is getting closer and closer to his ideal. So we are, as mentioned at the beginning of the class, we are getting closer and closer to one of Brahma's main statements, which will happen in the next verse, regarding Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, which is basically the ontological statement of the Bhagavatam par excellence, which established this definitive fact or truth that Krishna is the fountainhead of all faces of divinity. So all this again is building up to that. So there is some connection made by our acharyas between the last verse and the present one, and as it is usual with all these verses of this series of prayers, there is a thread, because as we know, we are giving these classes once every 7 days, but Brahma is presenting all these verses right one after another, so there must be some thread and emotional connection and conceptual connection in them. So in the previous verse that we just summarized, Brahma is referring to Krishna as basically his mother, and Brahma being a baby inside the womb. So after comparing Krishna to a pregnant woman in the previous verse, Brahma is to say that however fierce that Krishna may object, saying that actually he, Krishna, is male. I'm Purusha, I'm a male, so how can I be your mother? So in today's verse, therefore, Brahma will refer to Krishna as his father, just in case to have all the bases covered. Or also another possibility is, if Krishna were to to respond saying that the mother delivers her baby, but when did he, Krishna, deliver Brahma? If Krishna were to present that possibility, then Brahma will counter that, saying that actually Brahma has been delivered by him, by Krishna, in a particular way. So anyhow, let's go to the verse in itself. I'll share the verse here. Let's see if it's enough to... I think it's enough. I'll recite first in Sanskrit. This is in Upajati Chanda. Many of the verses are in this Chanda, although the third line is a little bit irregular. Verse 13, it says like this. Jagatrayanto dadi samplabode narayana syodaranabhilanat vinirgato yastuiti vannavai mrisha kintuishvara tvam navinirgatosmi. So let's go to the English translation. Let's see how much we can put here. I think it's too long for the whole thing, but I will at least put a part. It says, "My dear Lord, the revealed scriptures say that the unborn Brahma," so he refers to him in third person, "comes out of the lotus flower growing from the navel of Narayana, who lies in the waters of dissolution into which the three worlds have merged. These worlds are surely not false. So, was I not born from you?" So basically this is... Brahma's verse. 13th verse of the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So again, here Brahma is referring to Krishna as his father. First he did that as his mother, now he's going to his father, mentioning, referring to himself in third person, like trying to be as objective as possible and mentioning what Shastra is saying from time immemorial. Because of course we know that Brahma is speaking himself for himself, but we know that there are many Brahmas. So this process happens age after, every time a creation cycle is beginning. It's not just that it happened to him. So it is said from Shastra, interestingly, Brahma to begin with refers to revelation, to set his case, if you will, to make it clear, I'm not just creating this notion out of myself. No, this is clearly established in revelation. So it's not Brahma's own speculation or something. So it's said in Shastra that the unborn Brahma, Ajja, sometimes called, comes from a lotus flower growing from the navel of Narayan. Of course, here Narayan will refer to Garbhdak Sai Vishnu, whom Brahma referred in the previous verse. And he lies in the waters of dissolution in which the three worlds have merged. These words are surely not false. So, was I not born from you? Again, he is replying to the possibility of Krishna in his Mukdata, Krishna in Vrindavan, feeling, I'm just a cowherd. What do you mean that I'm your mother, or that I'm your father, or that I'm the source of this and that? I'm just looking for my friends and calves. But Brahma is pushing in the direction of Aishwarya, and trying to establish, actually, Gaudiya Siddhanta, trying to establish for himself a philosophical foundation on which he can totally justify, if you will, and explain to himself what he's feeling for Krishna, which is the attraction he's feeling for Krishna. And so with this, making this point, if you have any feeling for Krishna, any attraction, it has to be philosophically justifiable, if you will. Bhava, in other words, Bhava has to have Siddhanta as its foundation, as its basis, at its core. As I like to put it, Bhava is a philosophical emotion. It's an emotion that grows out of the ground of Tattva and Siddhanta. If you take Tattva and Siddhanta and you just want to be emotional, of course you can do it. But we don't call it Bhava. At least not Bhava Bhakti. The word Bhava can mean emotion, of course, in certain contexts, referring to mundane emotionality. But the emotion Brahma is after, and hopefully we are after, has at its foundation Tatvam Siddhanta. So this is what Brahma is trying to establish for himself and by extension for each of us. So let's go to the word by word of this verse. So I'll put it again in the Sanskrit just in case for you to follow word by word. It says like this. First word, first expression in Jagat Traya. So Jagat Traya means of the three worlds. So this is the scene he's describing. Anta means in the dissolution, like Antya, end. Udadhi means of all the oceans. Samplava means during the total deluge. Uday means in the water. So he's depicting where this Narayan or Vishnu from which Brahma is born is lying, and which particular circumstance he is, first line. Second line, who is there? Narayana, Narayanasya means of Narayan, or in this case, of Garbhadakshay Vishnu specifically. Sometimes these terms may be interchangeable. Udara, which means growing from the abdomen. Then you have the name Damodara. Udara means abdomen. Nabhi means from the navel. Then you have the name Padmanabha. Here's Nabhi, navel. And Padmanabha means him from whom a lotus comes from his navel, basically. And Nalat, in this case, means lotus stem, from the lotus stem. Second line. Third line is in Vinirgato, or Vinirgataha, separately, means came out. Ajaha, the unborn one, the one who has no janma, Brahma. So that refers to Brahma in third person, Ajaha. Tu means indeed. Iti, thus speaking. Vak means the words. Na means are not. Bai means certainly. Mrisya means false. So with this is explaining, what I'm saying is not false actually. The unborn, came out from that Narayan, in those waters. So the last line basically presents, in a rhetorical way, Brahma's question and reply, again, in rhetorics. Kintu means thus. Ishvara means Ishvara, O Lord, basically. Again, some degree of Ishvara is there. Tvat, from you, Navirnigata Ashmi, I did not emerge. Of course, he's not confirming he did not emerge. He's presenting a question in this line, basically saying, actually, so was I not born from you, actually? Of course I was, that's the implication. So let's try to unpack a little bit the meaning of this particular shloka. I'll begin as usual with Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad, which is my Guru Maharaj's commentary on these different verses from the Brahma Stuti that he will include in his forthcoming book, Sakya Mandala, and that he generously shared with me so I can share with you. So what Brahma is saying, what he will say, is in continuation with what he said in the previous Bhavanubad from the previous verse, which was in connection that Krishna may further argue to Brahma, why do you say I am your mother? I am male, as we mentioned today. So then in reply to that, Guru paraphrases Brahma. He says, Brahma says here, you are my mother and my father. It is said in the scripture that after the deluge, when the upper, middle and lower planetary systems are submerged in water, Narayan, Garbhadakshay, lies down on that water, and gradually a lotus flower grows from his navel. At that time, someone referred to as the unborn, Aja, appears upon that lotus. Certainly, these words are not false. I am not that unborn one. So again, he's not challenging Krishna. He's not trying to contradict his guru, his masters, his all in all, but he's presenting his point from different perspectives and developing some charming confidence and trust in the possibility of intimacy in relation to Krishna. So from these places is that Brahma is actually expressing all the things with upgraded, increased humility. And try to bear this in mind. At every single verse of the Brahma Stuti, Brahma's humility is increasing. Like a very similar situation with Mahaprabhu in his Sikshastakam. It's not that only the third verse of Sikshastakam speaks about humility. From verse 1 that's going on there until verse 8 in constant crescendo, if you will. And that actually should be the idea in any series of prayers. We can conceive of them in that way. When you are studying the prayers of the gopis in the Bhagavatam, when we are studying the prayers of Brahma here, when you can study the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, so many series of prayers the Bhagavatam is sharing with us in such a generous way, we should think in that term. No, it's correct to think in that term. At every single verse of this series of prayers, the humility of the one who is praying the prayer is increasing, as we one day make the play of words. No, like someone who writes is a writer, someone who, whatever, who plays is a player, and someone who prays is a prayer, becomes a prayer. So in order to pray, we have to become of that same substance. We have to become prayer. So the point is, real prayer, of course, we are speaking here, that has to entail this progressive dynamics in which the one who is praying, the prayer, is increasing his her humility exponentially at every single step, at every single prayer. So it's okay for us to think in those terms when we are reading, studying, reciting the prayers of any of these personalities of our own. Ideally, this should be happening, an increase of humility. It's not that I'm starting to pray in a certain level, and the more I pray, the less humble I become. It doesn't work like that. The question will be, what type of prayer is that? That the more you pray, the less humility you have? I thought it was the opposite direction. The more you pray, the more humble you can become. And there's no limit to that. And that's why you can attain perfection through prayer in itself, vandanam. That's one of the nine expressions of Swarup Siddha Bhakti or Navabhidha Bhakti. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam. That's in Sakhimatma Nivedanam. So by prayer you can attain it all. But again, the prayer is not just like stuck thing that you do copy-paste and you are parroting what someone else said without any feeling whatsoever. That's not prayer. Prayer means you have to make... If you even are reciting others' prayers, you are memorizing, committing them to heart. What does it mean, committing to heart? Not committing to memory, committing to heart. When you say, I'm learning this by heart, hopefully that means by heart, not just memorizing the words. So you have to make those prayers yours. You have to own those prayers in the sense of, okay, someone else prayed from their particular situation, I can repeat these prayers, but in a way that apply to my particular situation. Or I can compose my own prayers according to my own situation. But sometimes we don't have, in the beginning, a clear idea of how to pray. Or we may think we have, but we are praying to the wrong person from the wrong things. So it's important to receive some reference for this and to learn from those who are prayer in itself already, those who pray become prayer. In the Bhagavatam, we have these great personalities who themselves are prayer unto themselves. So we can own their prayers in the way of taking, learning from them how they address Bhagavan, how they conceive him, which are the things that they include in their prayers. And we, if we are honest, we will feel, okay, in my particular stage, I specifically connect with these particular prayers, and I will try to identify naturally, not in a forced way, myself, with that corresponding petition, if you will, or call. So, again, I don't want to go too much into that direction, but I think it's important to see in this way, the progression, the progressive development of humility in prayer. And the more we pray, more humble will become. So it should, that's happening in all these prayers in Shastra. That should happen to us in our attempt of prayer, and this is happening here to Brahma. So the more we go, so keep that, my point is keep this in mind, the more we are continuing with our study till we reach verse number 40, which is the very last verse. We still have some long way to go there, but it's nice that we appreciate how Brahma's humility not only increases, but how that increase of humility is playing itself out in different ways of praying, different ways of expressing that humility. And again, further understand, humility takes unlimited shapes. The more we grow, and that's showing that we are growing in humility, actually. So in order to understand the different phases of humility that someone else is expressing, we ourselves have to increase our own humility to get closer to grasping that particular expression of humility, and to get closer to grasping how actually humility is something dynamic, progressive, and it's growing and it's expressing in different ways. And again, in order to survive those dynamics, we ourselves have to be working for that to happen, so we can understand not only how our own humility may take different shapes, but how others' humility are taking different shapes. Because if not, we run the risk of misreading others' humility and thinking, oh, he's being proud, he's being offensive for all this stuff, and misjudging, having prejudice, criticizing, of course, and we don't want to fall into apparat in the context of misreading others' humility, or our own humility for that matter. We may have a wrong idea of how we are supposed to be humble, and in the name of that, we may end up being dysfunctional. So be careful, pay attention. So this study of Brahma Stuti has to do with many things, as you can see. Anyhow, let's go to some of the different commentaries coming from ancient acharyas from our tradition. As usual, we will begin with Sridhar Swami. And he will mention in his Bhavartha Deepika, thus, in this verse, Brahma conveys the idea, the following idea. It is particularly well known that I am born from you. The question, was I not born from you, is a rhetorical question. The sense is, of course, I was born from you. So Sridhar Swami, just in case, is contributing here by confirming, actually Brahma is expressing himself in rhetorical terms. In other words, he's not having a doubt that he was born from Krishna. He's actually totally sure of that on the basis of Shastra, as we mentioned to begin with, well, on the basis of his own experience, for sure. He was the one born from the lotus. But also, if that's not enough, because, and that's another important point, we may have our experience, but for that to be legal in front of Bhagavan, that has to be backed up by Shastra. So that's what Brahma is doing, saying here, okay, I have my own experience, I remember, I know that I was born from that lotus, but Shastra is saying that as well. So it's not only my experience, only what I've gone through, but this is supported by revelation. And that's what gives weight to whatever we may have to say to Krishna. Remember, he's here speaking to Krishna. He's not speaking to any ordinary person that you can just say whatever without the necessity of quoting Shastra. Brahma is speaking to Bhagavan. And Bhagavan is Shastra Chakshu himself, as we were reading 2 days ago. He himself abides by Shastra. He himself operates through the eye of Shastra. So you have to speak with him in those terms. At least in the situation that Brahma is in. Of course, when you enter into the intimacy of Braj, nobody in Vrindavan will be quoting Shastra. But interestingly, they themselves will personify the highest reach of Shastra. So basically, Sridhar Swami is making this point here. It is particularly known, if there is something that is quite well known in Shastra, there are different things that Shastra says. Some statements may be more obscure, some others more well known. This one is pretty much well known, that I was born from you. And of course, the rhetorical question implies, of course, this is a fact. This is well known by almost everyone. So the idea, of course, again, this is not a challenging spirit, but Brahma is crying at the feet of Krishna, requesting, please show me your mercy, Father, in this case. He's not saying Father directly, but he's implying this. Srila Sanatana Goswami, let's go to his Brihad Vaishnava Toshani commentary on the Bhagavatam. He's saying that here, Brahma with the word two means only, Ajas two next to Ajas. So Ajas two means only I, the unborn, referring to him, or only the unborn, if we want to put it in third person. By using the word two, only Brahma makes one perceive that he's special compared to others, given that he originated from Bhagavan directly, which is a pretty far out birth, if you will. Generally, we are not born from a lotus flower that comes from the navel of one form of Bhagavan. So that's a pretty special birth. Again, he's not implying that with pride. He's implying that because he needs a special mercy, he needs special forgiveness, because he feels he made some special mistake. So he needs something which may be according to the level of the speciality of the degree of his mistake. He needs special mercy, special forgiveness, and that's why he presents himself as having some special connection with Bhagavan, in intimate terms, more and more intimate. So for this reason, Sanatana Goswami says there is the word vi, and vi means in a special way. When he says binirgata, nirgata means emerged, referring to how he emerged from the lotus. And binirgata means emerged in a special way. So Brahma was born in a special way. And therefore, again, the implication is he deserves special forgiveness. And he really feels the need for that. Again, he's not making a show. He's not being complacent here. He really feels the need. I do not need even abstract, overall, generic mercy, if there is something that we call like that. But in his subjective experience field, it's not enough with generic mercy. I need a very special type of forgiveness, because I made a very special type of mistake. So we see how his humility is in the background, even though it externally may sound bold. So therefore, Sanatana Goswami continues, Brahma implies here, and specifically the offense of me, who am the son, should be forgiven by you, the direct father. So the connection with the father is there as well. He didn't mention the word father, but he's presenting himself, I was born from you, I'm your child. Continue with the line of the previous verse, like a mother will forgive the kicking of the child from the womb. Specifically, I'm your son. So the son should be forgiven by the father. You are my direct father. Again, it's a particular special connection they have. Nobody is, almost apart from Brahma, basically is born directly in that way. So here Brahma is turning, he's begging of forgiveness to that perspective, from mother to father. So Krishna is the mother, but he's as well the father. That's the, if you will, main theme of this particular verse. Krishna is the mother, as it was said in the previous verse, Brahma's mother, Brahma's father. Sri Sanatana Prabhu continues, paraphrasing Brahma. Brahma says, according to Sri Sanatana Goswami, O Lord, Ishvara. And in this way, by saying Ishvara, Brahma is addressing Krishna with bhakti as the Almighty, thinking that calling Bhagavan the Father is inappropriate. So again, Brahma is not saying Father directly. He's hinting at that, of course, but he's addressing Krishna officially here with the name Ishvara, which, as we know, implies power, greatness, godhood. So, okay, you may be my father, but you are Bhagavan on top of that, so Ishvara. So again, we see how both Aishwarya and Madhurya, awareness of Krishna's majesty and his position as God, as well as the glimpse into the intimacy Brahma wants to have, all these two are intermingled in his prayers. Although eventually they will give more and more place to the intimacy that Brahma wants to attain ultimately in Sakya Bhava. But here, again, we have an Aishwaric moment And Brahma calls Krishna Ishvara. Or Sanatana Goswami says the drift here is, O Lord, although I emerge from Narayana, I emerge only from you, ultimately from you. Although I was technically born from Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Brahma is realizing here, you are Garbhodakshay Vishnu's source. You are the source of the Purusha avatars. You are the source of all Vishnus. You are the source of God himself, of Narayana himself. You are Krishna's too, Bhagavan Swayam. That's the point he will make in the next verse. So if you want to take that he emerged from Narayana, okay, there's no difference in tattva between Narayana and Krishna. There is a difference in bhava and rasa, in what each of them is tasting, if you will. And that's what makes Krishna Swayam Bhagavan. Rupa Madhuri, Prema Madhuri, Lila Madhuri, Venu Madhuri. So here he's making this non-difference between Narayana and Krishna. And therefore I can say I was born from you, Krishna. In the next verse, of course, he will make a difference. There is no difference in one sense, non-difference again in tattva, but there is a difference, bed, in terms of bhava rasa. And that what makes Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam and Narayana an anga of Krishna. Let's continue with Sarartha Darshini and getting closer to our conclusion here from Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is paraphrasing paraphrasing Brahma, as most of the commentators used to do. So Brahma is saying through his lotus lips, it is stated that at the time of dissolution, the three planetary systems are merged into the water. We know this. Gradually, a lotus flower grows from the navel of Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and Brahma appears upon that lotus flower. Others may or may not come from you, but certainly I am born from you. So again, this is the scenario depicted in this verse by Brahma, referring to the time of dissolution for this whole universal cycle, and how all this planetary systems, higher, intermediate, lower, are merged into the water, and eventually, after that happened, that deluge happens, this lotus flower is coming from Garbhodakshay Vishnu's navel and restarting a new creative cycle, as we know, with Brahma being born there and Brahma being the architect of the whole multiverse and so on. So again, Brahma is saying, some others may come or may not come from you, but certainly I am born from you. That's a fact. I have pratyaksha, direct experience of that. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further adds that in Brahma's case, this is especially true, that he was born from Bhagavan. For Sri Narayan is both his mother as well as his father. Again, he made this point. Previous verse, Bhagavan is my mother. This particular verse, Bhagavan is my mother. And interestingly, we could even go further than that. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes his point here. He says, because Brahma takes birth from the lotus, growing from the Lord's navel, Bhagavan is also his grandfather. So we can say, now technically speaking, Brahma is not born from Vishnu himself, but from the lotus. So the lotus is Brahma's mother and father. Okay, then Bhagavan is his grandfather and grandmother. So what, however you may like to put, you may say, and as Srila Prabhupada used to say, generally the grandfather is more affectionate to the grandchild than the father to the child. It's more forgiving. So even if you want to put the lotus in between and say that actually Brahma is born from a lotus, so Krishna is only grandfather, grandmother, that further makes Brahma's case, which is you have to be merciful and forgiving to me and the grandfather and grandmother is much more so than the parents of the child. So however you may like to put it, it only helps to make Brahma's case grow exponentially. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes his commentary saying, he addresses the Lord as Ishwar which means that he has inconceivable power and can thus be both mother and father at the same time. Because, of course, the question may be, you know, generally we don't have the experience of someone being the mother and the father simultaneously. No? We need both for the child to happen, if you will. No? So if one made that present that question, then Brahma is saying, well, but in my particular case, Brahma is saying, my father, mother, and I don't want here to delegate politics and gender issues and so on, but my father, mother is Ishvara, is known as Ishvara, and Ishvara is accompanied by Achintya Shakti, Agatana Gatana, which means a potency that can make the impossible possible. That's basically who my father, mother is. So that's possible in my particular case. I know it sounds, Brahma says, I know it may sound weird for most. Many people won't have that particular point of reference of one same person being father and mother. But he is special. And I am special because of having a connection with he who is that special. I'm not special in a separate sense. So this is an important point. Real humility implies acknowledging a level of a speciality in our lives. But why? Because we are connected with this person who is so special. So technically speaking, it wouldn't be a problem if you say, I am special as a Vaishnava. The point is that you have a very clear idea of why you are special. How special is the connection that makes you special, basically. So there's place for this type of expressions in the realm of humbleness. You can even say, I am special. But in a way that further showcases how special is the mercy you are receiving, how special is the nature of your source, how special is the forgiveness you are requiring from him, and how special may be also the mistake you have committed, and how much you need to be shown further shelter. So there's place again for this type of things. We shouldn't take for granted, like, okay, if you just consider yourself as special, you are necessarily wrong at every stage of your process. That's not necessarily the case. Of course, you have to walk the talk and you have to deal with that internally with integrity. But there's place for that. And Brahma is showing that in these prayers. Let's conclude with some brief words from Srinath Chakravarti. Who is saying the following. He's the guru of Kavi Karnapur. He's paraphrasing. He's saying like this. As Krishna is saying to Brahma, according to Srinath Chakravarti, as I am the mother of all, since everything was in my abdomen, so I belong to you too. Hence, I will forgive your offense, but only after forgiving everybody else's offenses. So the point is, Srinath Chakravarti says, if maybe Krishna may say this, so Brahma responds in this verse to that possible statement, implying everyone has some mother and some father, but only you are my mother and father. So this offense should be pardoned. On this ground, Brahma is requesting special forgiveness. Special mercy. You follow the point, no? Krishna may say, okay, you say before that everyone is in my abdomen. So somehow I'm the mother of all, not only of you. So I can forget your offense, but also have to forget everyone else's offense for that matter. So that will happen after I forgive everyone else's offense. And Brahma then makes this case. No. Okay, yes, everyone is in your womb, but I have some special way of, I'm not only in your womb as a child and you are my mother, you are also my father. You may be the mother of all, but in the connection of this example, you are not the father of all. So, and you are my mother and my father at the same time. So Brahma is feeling the urgency. I need a special forgiveness now, please. Again, all this request is not Brahma's demanding in a whimsical way something to Krishna to further exploit whatever his exploits, but actually he's feeling the need, the urgent need of receiving mercy, the urgent need of receiving forgiveness for something he acknowledges was not right. So again, we should empathize with this, and we should make these prayers our own. We should get this point that, and again, not in a neurotic way, not on that extreme of the pendulum, but not on the other extreme of the complacency pendulum. Not complacency, not neurosis, but the middle point, proper acknowledgement, proper repentance, proper humility. So we should reach this point. I felt some urgent need for mercy. I mean, that's the real price, to pray for mercy. If you don't feel you need mercy, you can look at yourself. Generally, we are not praying for mercy at every single moment of our lives, unfortunately. And that's why, because we don't feel the need for that. We only feel the need for mercy in certain specific moments. And then we pray, we feel the need, and we pray fervently. So the problem is not that we don't need that much mercy. The problem is that we don't realize how much mercy we need, actually. And we just only pray for mercy generally when we are suffering or we are in need of some relief of the reactions of previous works or whatever. But the real situation is actually we are in urgent need of mercy at every single moment of our lives. Gradually we have to awake to that reality. And that's why topmost devotees who are totally situated in the last, the ultimate platform of existence, they realize this, they see this, they inhabit these ideas, these concepts. They really feel, I'm in urgent need of mercy at every single step in my eternal life. And that's why I always say, there's a high price, very high price to pay for mercy, for that type of mercy, for that standard. You have to have so much humility. Because you are to live for eternity feeling, I'm in urgent need of something that I will never deserve, no matter what I do. So, and that will keep growing exponentially forever. So that means your humility has to keep growing exponentially without a stop for eternity. And therefore the experience of need of mercy, or you being in need of mercy, has to grow exponentially forever. And the receiving of that mercy, of course, will also be growing exponentially forever. All of them will go together forever. So Brahma here is making that point also by saying all this. He's showing this, establishing this particular principle. He's begging for forgiveness. He's begging for causeless grace more and more intensely. And his humility is growing correspondingly to that request, if you will. And Krishna's reply, of course, to that, response to that, reciprocation to that, will be there as well. Jayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva vajamya. But all this has no end. So we have to prepare ourselves to pray, to pay the price for eternity, if you will. You want a ticket there? Eternity, as Śrīla Maharaj, is not mere eternity, mere sat, satchit ananda. So he will say, progressive and, how do you say it? Positive and progressive immortality. You want immortality, eternity, but it's not just mere sad. We want it to be progressive and positive. Positive, there is love, there is ananda, there is progressive. Like, in other words, it's always growing. It's always expanding. What that reality has to offer to you is always growing. And therefore, what you have to do in order to properly host and honor what that reality has to offer has to be always growing. A new degree of rasa, a new degree of love, a new degree of love and interaction is available at every moment, and your corresponding serving this service, disposition, humility, and surrender has to be growing so you can match what that reality is offering in reciprocation with you. It's a reciprocal dealing, dynamics here. So all this, again, is very beautifully established by Brahma in this series of prayers. We may see it or not, but that's there. So we have to go to the underlying implications beyond the official prayer, if you will. We have the official prayer, but there are lots of underlying implications that we have to learn how to play them out. So anyhow, some thoughts I want to share today with you in connection to verse number 13. And in the next verse, which is verse 14, as I already mentioned a few times, but one more time to conclude. In the next verse, which is a very famous one of the, there are many well-known verses in this Brahma Stuti, and this is one of the main ones. In the next verse, Brahma will establish, again, how Krishna is not only the source of the first, second, and third Purusha, but Krishna is the source of Narayan as well, of Vishnu. Krishna is the source of God. God is an aspect of Krishna, not vice versa. So he will refer to Narayan as an Anga of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So this will again further pound the post of what the Bhagavatam famously say, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. So this next verse will express that as it is being played out in this whole Brahma Vimohan Lila Brahma Stuti. Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam in motion. That's what we will keep seeing. So this is a very, very important verse that we will be sharing from here like to a week or so. We will be announcing when that will be taking place. I will be already in Elatra for that time. That will be next week. So I'll notify about days and timings for that. So here we will finish today, unless someone of the ones present connected as well had any question or comments you would like to share. There's some comment from Bhakti Rasa here. Interesting, says something in connection to something I mentioned like an hour ago, but I'm reading it just now. By invoking Adokshaya, this was with the summary of the previous lecture, referring to Puttana, he can be reminding Krishna of his magnanimous response to the extreme offense of Puttana. Yeah, also that's in play there. Thanks for sharing. As we know, Puttana received this extraordinary, extreme Kripa Siddhi, and she wanted to kill Krishna with the worst possible attitude, and she was promoted to Vatsalya, the Vatsalya camp. So totally unthinkable. Totally non-corresponding reaction by Krishna. But anyhow, that's his merciful nature. Anyhow, anything else? Okay, so I think we will stop here and hope to see you these days. We will have some further lectures, not on Brahma Stuti, but on other topics. Today it was announced one Q&A in the evening, but actually I won't be able to be there, so we have cancelled that lecture. I have some other engagements here. So see you for tomorrow's lecture in the morning. We have Q&A in the morning at the same time, and on Sunday midday there will be some katha on Srinam. The Buddhists will be having some kirtan here, and so on. We will be continuing our series in the next day. So thank you so much to all of you. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Pramanam, Hari Hari Vo.